The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
It's hour number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. You can access the program by calling 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our guest in this hour is Pastor Mark Femmel. He is pastor at Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights and has grown measurably in fame and stature because his church has been busy helping people who suffered through some bad weather here a couple of weeks ago in the St. Louis area. I even understand you made it on the television news here locally. So you're like sort of a celebrity now, is that right?
Jesus has become quite a celebrity. We've been on Channel 2, we've been on Channel 4, Channel 11, and been on them numerous times just because our congregation came together the next day after the tornadoes hit, you know, that Saturday, and started getting on the ground and getting the plan in place, and now we even get to help out Alabama.
So Maryland Heights was in the path of the tornado or in proximity to the tornado. Did you have damage in your neighborhood?
My house did not have damage, but as far as the damage in our neighborhood, all the houses around us were in some way affected, and then one of our members, they had complete house damage. And
complete
then a
number house damage, would that mean it was gone?
Yeah.
Really?
Not like Wizard of Oz gone, as in, you know, yeah, where'd the house go? But, yeah, I mean, the house is flat, and they were kind of rummaging through things. And a number of our members actually had some minor damage to their house. And I got to tell you, it is when crises happen that you see how powerful the message that you hear on Sundays all the time. Our members rallied right away. We had nothing on Monday morning, and we started doing a collection of, like, food and clothes and everything else. We had nothing on Monday morning, and by Monday afternoon, some of the tables were stacked taller than I am, and I'm almost 6.5 feet tall. So
how do you explain that? What's going on there?
With what?
The fact that you had a severe crisis and people rallied.
God has hardwired us to want to do good. And
I thought we were sinners to the core.
Yeah, we have been hotwired that way. But God, we have not entirely lost our bearings. We recognize what good is, and it is an amazing thing. You have people that have been formed and shaped by hearing about Jesus every Sunday. Love your neighbor as I have loved you. You know, love one another as I have loved you. That's the new command, John 13. And it's an amazing thing. We've not only been able to do that much good, I mean, immediately. It was immediate. And people who aren't even in our church, almost entirely Christians, some that were not, you know, they didn't tell us either way, but they just showed up to volunteer to help sort things. We had a homeschool group from Pacific, Missouri that came by with a bunch of kiddos and moms and parents, and they came and they sorted a whole bunch of stuff out, packed some things up and organized some things and unpacked some things. And then we had some Boy Scout troops, a Girl Scout troop from Illinois came over to do all this great stuff. Kohl's even came by. And about 10 people from Kohl's came by and helped us out. And it was really cool, though, because when bad things happen, the people of God rally around you. Got to give a plug. Lutheran Foundation here said whatever money we raise, they'll match dollar for dollar. And that's for the whole St. Louis area, you know, for the tornado disaster relief, just like they did for Japan. And then Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, they've got this organization called World Relief and Human Care. Mm-hmm. And they called me Monday morning by 9:15, and by the afternoon they had already approved us a grant for $3,500. Just right on the ground right away. And it was so cool to see all this love pour in. And then the money is coming in, the things are coming in, and we helped about 300 people find things that they needed. And we helped well over 1,000 people kind of get that do something good fix, think out of sight of yourself fix, and it was an amazing thing.
Anybody in your congregation, the people whose house was flattened, anybody say, Pastor, why did God do this to me? Why did God allow this to happen to me? Anybody ask you that question?
None of our members asked that question, but what I did on starting on that Saturday is I started walking through the neighborhoods where things were hurt, and I checked out our neighbors' houses. as best as I was able to, because it's kind of difficult to get into some of those areas when the trees fell across the street. But then I spent a good deal of time talking to their neighbors. And I saw that, and some people, they said, you know, I know God's up to something. And some people said, you know, why in the world does this kind of stuff happen? And I said, well, you know, you look at what happens to the people of God and people throughout everywhere, and everybody suffers the same. However, those who trust in God have something bigger. They've got somebody who can undo this. And I said, when you look at the cross of Jesus Christ, it makes very little sense. Why doesn't God do it some other way? Why did it have to be so ugly? Why did it have to hurt so much? And there God's doing his greatest work. And we see it time and time in the Bible, and when we look back in our lives, when things make the least amount of sense to us, that's when God is up to his best work.
It's pretty hard to process, particularly if you're in the middle of the crisis or your house is gone. I'm thinking that when you share that kind of a message with somebody, they might be inclined to say, well, that's nice, Pastor. I hope you have a nice service this Sunday, but you know, right now we don't have a house. Can you help us with that? Anybody come at you from that direction?
There are some people who you could kind of tell was a round peg in a square hole, you know?
Yeah.
And but it was awesome because I was able to say, you know, God just so loves you that we've got all this stuff up at our church and we just need you to stop by and take it home or wherever you're staying. And what's really cool is when disasters happen, you really see the need for all the stuff we do all the time. It's kind of like when the ship's sinking, that's the wrong time to register for swimming lessons. But if you get swimming lessons when everything's fine and you're able to concentrate on how to swim, when the ship starts sinking, because ships will always sink, you're ready to go. It's just go time. You know exactly what to do. The time to kind of get your theology straight and your beliefs straight is not when your house is flat, but when you got a home and everything's stable, that's when you should be especially going to church, going to Bible study, or listening to exemplary radio shows.
Well said.
So you're ready for that
well
stuff.
Well said. Thank you. So there you are doing kingdom work up in Maryland Heights, and the church at various levels, as you have described it, rallies in really rapid fashion, surprisingly rapid, as we all know that institutions sometimes move slowly, and you get the attention of the world. Here comes Channel 2, Channel 4. You know, these are not Christian television stations. These are not Christian enterprises. Here comes Channel 11, and they got their video cameras, and they're going to tell your story. That's kind of a dangerous moment, isn't it, Pastor?
It is, because just like when you put something in print, when there's a camera rolling, it's out there forever. And we were very concerned about that, at least I personally was. And, you know, you always hear about how people villainize the media. And there are times where sometimes the media does something that they shouldn't do. But when we started calling the TV shows the news channels to kind of give us some information and publicity or help us get things out, and we didn't initiate that contact. It just it started happening, and then we actually did actively contact one news organization for something that's taking place today. I'll talk about it in a second. But when they started rolling their cameras, I was wondering what they would keep and what they would edit out. And every time I made sure to get at least one quote where it was one of these gold quotes, where it was something like, you know, when you see these disasters and these things happen all around us, we have no idea what God's up to. But stop by Zion and you'll see what you can be sure God's up to. You know, or something like, you know, they said, why in the world would you do this? And we say, we hear and see the love of God all the time. And we realized it was about time to show people the love of God in their lives right now. And here it is. And it was so cool because every news channel carried at least one of those quotes.
Kind of dangerous moment for you, too. You have a little bit of an ego, don't you, Pastor? And all of a sudden, the bright lights are trained on you, and the reporters are talking to you. It's your chance for 15 minutes of fame, and maybe get your head swelled a little bit. Is there a danger in that?
Well, there was, and in some of the channels, I showed them my juggling act. I lit these bowling pins on fire, and I juggled, but nobody carried that. That's where all my hair went. It got singed off.
Yeah, I noticed you got a little less hair than you used to have.
Yeah. No, it is dangerous, you know, to get this this ego trip. But the only way you're going to keep yourself on the right path is the same way as every other way you resist every temptation. You keep your eyes on the prize. You keep your eyes on Christ, and you realize who brought you there and who made this moment possible. And then that ego stays in check right where it belongs.
All right, let's go into John chapter 5 here. This is a question that I wanted to put to Pastor Golden, didn't get a chance to because I didn't manage the time very well, ran out of time. But in John chapter 5, verses 1 through 17, we have the account of the healing that Jesus does at the pool of Bethesda, which John tells us was done on the Sabbath. And the verse that I want to deal with is verse 14. So here are all these people described here as lame and paralyzed and blind. They're all at the pool of Bethesda, and Jesus walks up to this one man and he says, "Do you want to be healed?" And the outcome is that Jesus tells him to take up his bed and walk, and he does, and he is healed. And then in verse 14 it says, "Afterward," meaning I guess we sort of close that moment where that healing takes place. And there are a lot of people there, and can you imagine what that must have looked like? It must have been chaos. "Afterward," separated from that energy and chaos, it says Jesus found him in the temple. And here's what he says to him, "See, you are well." The man knows that quite well. And then he says, "Sin no more." Now, what did he mean by that, Pastor? There isn't a human being on the face of the earth who can, after having received a spectacular miracle like this, or having had a tornado blow away their house, there isn't a single person who can say, "Okay, done sinning, not going to do that anymore, can't be done." Why would Jesus say, "Sin no more," to this person? Doesn't that strike you as odd?
Well, it's not. He's not saying, "Sin no more, lest I strike you dead," or "If you ever sin again, then you're going to be back on that mat." He's simply telling them, "You know, now stay away from sin. Don't go back to it." Now, of course, when the man does go back to it, he's still healed. He still sees and is daily living the reality that God loves him. But I mean, this is the Christian call. As Jesus says in Matthew, "Be holy as your Father in heaven is holy." Can we be as holy? No, but that doesn't mean stop trying. That doesn't mean then therefore be content that you are imperfect, so be as imperfect as you can.
The thinking of Jesus' day, the religious thinking of Jesus' day, and the religious thinking of our day really hasn't changed that much over 2,000 years, is that we live our lives and we're confronted with options to do good or to do bad. And the purpose of living is to choose to do good, and the purpose of religion is to help you choose to do good. That's the way a lot of people see it. So that as Jesus and his disciples are walking down the road, they see a man blind from birth, and the disciples ask the obvious question, because they see a man who is faced with great adversity, and he's been blind all of his life. Somebody must have done something really wrong here. Now, who was it? Was it his parents who sinned that caused this man to be blind from birth? Or was it somehow he who sinned that caused him to be blind from birth? Cause and effect, quid pro quo. Somebody did something wrong, and there you see the punishment. When this man, who has been an invalid for 38 years, one would conclude that he must have done something really terrible to be in that state. And Jesus seems to reinforce that thinking by saying, "Sin no more. You see, you sinned, and you've been an invalid for 38 years. Now I've healed you. Stop sinning. Don't sin anymore so that you don't have any other adversity." Jesus seems to be supporting that notion that the man was an invalid because he had done some terrible thing. Is that what Jesus is doing when he says sin no more?
Jesus frequently condemns that very opinion, in that at one point there's a rich man and he comes to Jesus and says, "You know, what must I do to be saved?" He says, you know the commandments. He says, "These I've kept ever since I was young." And he says, "Well, then therefore sell all that you have and then follow me." And the man goes away sad. And that's when Jesus says it is easier for a camel to fit through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to
enter the kingdom of God.
And so you get that dichotomy, but the disciples come back and say, "Well, who then can be saved?" And Jesus
says,
"Well, it's impossible." for man, but with God all things are possible. Meaning, it's not that you're rich and so all of a sudden now you know that God approves of everything that you do. So Jesus routinely condemns that. But with here, you're talking to a guy who's been invalid for decades. And without reading too much into the text, if you've been paralyzed for decades or invalid for decades and you've been begging, that's a whole lot of learned behavior you've got to undo. And that's a whole lot of problems and dependency that you've got to leave behind. And so here Jesus is saying, sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. He's saying, you know, you've got a new life. Don't do what you did.
All right, one more question. Verse 17. The issue here in John chapter 5, in these first verses, is the healing on the Sabbath. The Word of God is clear, as I mentioned to Pastor Golden in the previous hour. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. On the Sabbath day, the Word of God says, you shall do no work. There's one guy who goes out and picks up some sticks on the Sabbath. He gets smoked right on the spot. That sends a pretty clear message. So this man picks up his bed and is carrying it, and he is doing work on the Sabbath. That's the issue here. And then when Jesus is confronted and being persecuted by the religious leaders of his day because he told this man to do work on the Sabbath, Jesus says, my Father is working, this is verse 17, my Father is working until now, and I am working. Now, what are they supposed to understand by that comment? Because they're confused. Look, we have the Word of God, no work on the Sabbath. You seem to be making messianic claims, and here you are telling a guy to work on the Sabbath. That's a problem. It's a clear problem. And Jesus' answer is, my Father is working, and I am working. How is that supposed to clear up the problem?
Well, this whole work thing, it's not, you know, Jesus is nailed on this in another place, or is attempted to be nailed on this, and he says, you know, look, on the Sabbath, if one of your animals falls into a ditch or a well, you help them out. And so the commandment is saying, you know, you don't do your routine work, you know. And so it's not, there's no physical exertion permissible, you know. You can pick your nose four times, but the fifth time, well, that's employment now, you know. So, you know, it's not like that. But what Jesus is saying here is, you know, this man is not doing this routine work. I'm not telling him to go get a job today. Instead, he's saying, pick up your mat, go home. And that's when they, with their traditions that they have, which they interpreted to be no physical exertion of certain categories on the Sabbath. And then Jesus says, my Father is working, so I'm working. And the only person before the sacrifice of Jesus who is exempt from that sacrifice of time is God. And God, they would have no argument with God working on the Sabbath. And therefore, if Jesus is working on the Sabbath, and God is still working through him to do miracles, it's clear that he's making the claim that I too am God. And this is the big problem. When they try him, they put him on trial and they say, you claim to be God. And, you know, of course, the trial comes to the right conclusion. He does claim to be God. But they didn't take the next step to say, all right, well, are you wrong? And they just assumed that he could not possibly be God when their scriptures and our scriptures uniformly say that at some point God will dwell among you.
I think there are a lot of people, Christian people, who believe that God is at rest. 6 days of creation, 6 days of working, and then on the seventh day God rested, and has been resting ever since. He oversees the chaos on this very sinful planet, but for the most part, it's playing out sort of on its own. He observes what's happening. He may lift a finger here or there to stop something that would just bring the whole thing to a calamitous end, but for the most part, he's at rest. What is this comment, my Father is working until now, and I am working, say to the person who believes that God is indifferent, passive, distant, basically at rest?
Sure. Well, this is the big thing with our founding fathers. It was something called deism at the time, in which you just kind of said God's like the master clock worker, and he's so good, he doesn't even need to interfere. He just started it, and he barely tweaks his creation as it goes along. And to that you would say, well, then when you look at the miracles of Jesus and the miracles within the Bible, which we can say with historical certainty are historical facts, there's a lot of research that's been done on that. How in the world does that stuff happen? How in the world does somebody pray for something that's certain to go another way, and then all of a sudden it changes? How are medical doctors routinely befuddled with miraculous healings when there's no other explanation other than something happened that cannot happen? Well, God's involved. Not only involved, but involved to take care of us, to love us, and reach out to us, that we can live with him forever.
So if being at rest and generally uninvolved is like a 1 on a scale of 1 to 10, how active, how workaholic, it's probably not the right term, is God on that scale?
Well, let's put it this way. There's 168 hours in the week. Chuck, he is at work 168 hours a week on you. And he is at work for 168 hours a week on me. Everything that goes on in our lives. So I suppose his typical work week is whatever 7 billion-ish times 168 hours a week is. And that would kind of be his work time. But it's okay, because he's really good at what he does.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Terrence, you're on the Bible study. Good morning.
How you doing there, Chuck?
Doing good.
I wanted to go back to verse 14 and ask the pastor where you were reading, where it says, after Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you are well, sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you." I wonder, when he's saying "see," he's basically saying "believe, you are well." And when he says "sin no more," he's saying "stop believing that nothing worse may happen to you." Would that be correct?
Well, sure, the "see, you are well" is Jesus pointing out to what he's already done in this guy's life. And when he's saying "sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you," sin always has very real, not only eternal, but immediate problems. You know, so if you lie to somebody, all of a sudden you've hurt that trust, or you got to continue to lie, you're going to start feeling dirty inside, you got to keep living up the lie. And when it blows up in your face, then you got to say you're sorry and make up for it. And so he's saying, stay away from sin. There's nothing good that comes out of it. And so he's essentially saying, believe, you know, see, you are well, I did it, now follow. So it's kind of a believe and follow.
Right, right, because you're using, you know, you're showing a child something, or even anyone something, you say, see, it's in a sense, now you can believe.
Right.
And, you know, it just seems to me that he's saying, believe, you are not well, and stop believing so that nothing worse may happen to you, because something worse happening to the guy, other than him being, you know, disabled for that many years, I suspect that Christ is talking about condemnation.
Well,
more
see,
so than another physical ailment.
Yeah.
Am I correct in
that? Yeah. See, that's the worst thing. If he ignores what Jesus has plainly shown him, then if he becomes blind to what God has done in his life, something worse, like you said, condemnation is going to follow. Especially in the Gospel of John, you're right on. In the Gospel of John, you get these light and darkness and vision and blindness themes. Light is where people see things and things are revealed and things are made clear. Darkness is where things are hidden and things are done in secret that will be exposed. And so when he's saying see, he's literally saying take advantage of the light that's hitting you right now. Realize that you should trust in me. And now that I've proven myself to you, follow me.
Yes, because ultimately that's the purpose that Christ is here, so that we may be saved, so we may believe. You paid the price for it. So I figure in him saying this to this man, ultimately was to bring this man to faith.
Yeah, and the Gospels are clear about that, you know, follow Jesus, and especially John, like in John chapter 20, verse 30 and 31, he said, you know, there's so many things else I could have written, but they're not in this book, but the things I did write, I've written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name, so when you're dead on. This is John's purpose in everything he writes.
Thank you, Pastor.
Hey, thank you.
All right, Terrence, thank you very much. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 if you'd like to join us with a question or a comment for Pastor Mark Femmel, Zion Lutheran Church, Maryland Heights. We will resume on the other side of this break. I want to find out what Pastor Femmel's perspective is on the execution, I guess that's the right term, of the criminal Osama bin Laden. We've had a week to think about it. We'll see what he has to say on the other side of this break.
I've heard business people complain that nonprofits don't respond in timely ways to needs and opportunities. I believe that's true. Concordia Seminary strives to instill responsiveness in our graduates. Responsiveness to the needs of congregations and responsiveness to the needs of our communities and world. Responsiveness is a seminary core value, and it's a great commission value.
It's the 10th annual Art on the Square, free for all. It's an art show with family entertainment, children's workshops, and more. Now for the 10th year, the Belleville Art on the Square, which has received another number one ranking by Art Fair Sourcebook, goes on display May 13th through May 15th. ArtOnTheSquare.com has more information about what you'll see from the artists at the 10th annual Art on the Square at the Belleville Public Square.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
One of Europe's youngest surviving premature babies went home with her parents after months in an incubator. Frida weighed only a pound when born at just over 21 weeks into her mother's pregnancy. This is just a little more than halfway through pregnancy. One of the doctors said her life was hanging from a thread, but she fought through. Frida was equal to an average birth weight when she finally went to her home near Frankfurt. This is a reminder abortion has a considerable impact on premature births. Not all, of course, but the British Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found an abortion increases the chances of a premature birth by a third. More than one abortion nearly doubles the risk. There are enough premature births in the world without adding more through abortion.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Sectarian violence. I'm Norman Hall with Religion Roundup. A deadly clash between Muslim extremists and Coptic Christians in Cairo has left 12 people dead and a church burned. Both sides accuse the other of firing from rooftops. Coptic Christians make up about 10% of Egypt's population. They say Egypt's military rulers are not protecting them or their institutions. Pope Benedict has called on Italy to welcome immigrants to its shores. He made the appeal in Venice, where more than 300,000 worshippers attended a mass. A historic African-American church at the nation's capital has gone green. Florida Avenue Baptist Church pastor Earl Trent Jr. says 44 solar panels have been placed on the church's flat roof, generating 10 kilowatts of power. Trent says the scriptural basis for the project is straight out of Genesis.
Where the Lord made, looked at everything and everything was good. And then he just said, go take care of it.
Some members are interested in solar power for their homes. With Religion Roundup, I'm Norman Hall.
Here's a special KFUO radio salute to our day sponsor on this Monday, May 9th, 2011, Liddell Agrippino. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to KFUO in celebration for the 30 years of wonderful marriage that the Lord has blessed Liddell and her husband, John. Once again, we say thank you to Liddell Agrippino of Maryland Heights, today's KFUO radio day sponsor.
There are so many reasons to give thanks. The days are growing longer and getting warmer. Perhaps our vacations are being planned. There are birthdays and anniversaries being celebrated. Perhaps someone you know is graduating. For whatever reason you might be giving thanks this month, we'd like you to let us celebrate with you. Become a KFUO Radio Day Sponsor in the month of May and let us in on your particular joy this spring. Call Joni Harwell today at 314-505-7874.
You're listening to the Bible Study. This is the Ask the Pastor Hour. I'm Chuck Rathert. Pastor Mark Femmel is with us here today from Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. Spent some time in the first half hour talking about the good work that his church has done to help alleviate some of the pain and distress caused by the tornadoes that went through the St. Louis area a couple weeks ago. And I think you alluded to the fact that you've got an event today. Is that right? You have something on the schedule today?
Right. This is the last peg in the whole helping people out of this specific event. And what we're going to do is at 1:30 today, we're going to get a bunch of people together to create a human chain to get all the things that have been packed up and put it right on the truck. And the things aren't packed up too heavily, you know, if you can, unless you've got, you know, like a broken spine or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, then we'd encourage you to go see a doctor. But if you can, you know, carry a light to medium weight box, we're going to set up a human chain. You don't even have to walk upstairs. We're just going to hand the box to the person right next to us and put it on the truck. Should only take about 30 to 40, maybe 45 minutes.
Where do we go if we want to show up?
Oh, sure. If any of your listeners are willing to help, and in the St. Louis area, we are. You go to 270, just south of 270 and 70 on Dorset Road. Go inside 270, one-third of a mile at 12075 Dorset, and it'll be right there. Big old red brick church, really colorful playground. And there'll be a UPS truck out there. UPS has donated the truck to take it down to Tuscaloosa.
Oh, wonderful. And what time again?
1:30.
1:30 this afternoon.
Today. Yep.
Okay.
2.5 hours. 2 hours.
So we were talking about in John chapter 5, particularly in the wake of Terrence's call. Let me see if I can put this in Chuck terms here, and you can then straighten me out. When in verse 14 it says, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you are well, sin no more." "See, you are well" seems to be appealing to the healed man to look at the evidence of his own miracle. And that evidence speaks clearly. But usually we say that faith comes not by seeing. Jesus said to Thomas, "Do you believe because you have seen? Blessed are those who have not seen." So it seems odd to me that Jesus would say to him, "See," or "Look at yourself. You were an invalid and now you're well." Doesn't that seem counterintuitive to what he said to Thomas? And then it also seems counterintuitive to say then after that, "Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you." Suggesting that if you now proceed with this evidence that you've had a miracle and respond rather in sinfulness instead of faith, then you're going to get whacked again. I think that's what I would read into that if I just were sort of making my way through John chapter 5. But that seems to be inconsistent with other places in Scripture. So can you help me out with that?
Well, sure. You know, it's not like that God owes you a visible, testable miracle in your life to bring you into the faith. However, if God does do something like that, pay attention to it. Heed the warning. See the writing on the wall and follow him. There's a number of people in Muslim countries right now where Christians are getting killed left and right or arrested for residential relocation, let's just say, off the planet. And what happens with them is in those same countries, there are scores of Muslims who are having these visions. They're having dreams in which Jesus comes to them and literally says, just like Paul, you know, I am Jesus. Muhammad is not my servant. He is wrong. And people wake up and they are brought into the faith immediately. They just try to find the Christians in the area. And when they do, then everything's verified. The dream is theologically and doctrinally correct, and it's amazing. But faith it does not need to have something visible. However, faith does come by hearing. You know, so like the Egyptians, when they see the Red Sea part, they don't think, "Oh, the God of the Jews must be the one true God." They think, "Well, this is weird. The Red Sea's parting. Let's run through before it closes so we can go kill some Jewish people today." The Jewish people, when they saw it, by the message that they had heard, "Wow, the Red Sea parted just like God told Moses to do, and now he's going to take care of us and drown the Egyptians. Oh, that's awesome." So they were able to, what they were able to see, they were able to understand because they heard the word of God.
All right, let's turn our attention to this Bin Laden question. I have a story from AP from Virginia Beach, Virginia, and the AP reports, "Even though Osama bin Laden was the face of evil in America for a decade, it's been difficult for religious leaders," that would be you, by the way, "religious leaders to find the right words to say about celebrations of the killing of the terror leader. In New York, at St. Francis of Assisi Church, the Reverend Stephen Mimnaugh said justice was served, but, quote, 'Catholics never rejoice in the death of a human being,' unquote. And he did not mention bin Laden during Sunday's Mass. In Virginia Beach, the sign outside the Reverend David Howard's church read, 'Osama bin Laden, Satan and the final victory of Jesus. At Second Baptist Church, the oldest black church in South Los Angeles, church member Goward Horton said he was happy about bin Laden's death and did not think that that conflicted with his beliefs. Some ministers say they understand the celebration about bin Laden's death because there have been years of fear and frustration. Richard Land, president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, said the Bible marks a distinction between individual Christians, who should pray for and forgive their enemies, and the state, which has a different responsibility. Land says bin Laden perpetrated crimes that properly carry the penalty of execution. In an interview on his website, Land said he was exultant when he heard that bin Laden had been killed by U.S. forces. Now here's the Ask the Pastor spin on this challenge as we try to sort this out. Because it is clear that in the aftermath of the execution of Osama bin Laden, there were people who were exultant or exuberant, celebrating, dancing in the streets. And there were people who were piously grateful that this mass murderer has been taken out, but were sad that it took his death to accomplish this goal. Two different reactions. Now, in your church, in my church, every Sunday we say a creed. And in the creed we confess that Jesus descended into hell. We have learned on this program that the descent into hell, as we confess it week after week, is about Jesus' exaltation, not about his humiliation. He didn't go to hell to suffer for us. He did that on the cross. Then he goes to hell. And what he does is, Pastor, apparently, if I've got this right, make an open show. It's a victory parade right down the main street of hell, making an open show of all Jesus' opponents, of Satan himself. Kind of like what maybe was going on in front of the White House Sunday night when word came that Osama bin Laden had been killed. So if it works for Jesus, that in his victory he makes an open show of his opponents, then why wouldn't it be appropriate for people who saw bin Laden as an evil, murderous individual to celebrate? Did that question make sense? Okay, all right.
If Jesus throws a party in hell, why shouldn't we?
There you did it in five words, and I did it in 500.
Yeah, so, you know, you do get Jesus when he goes into hell, and it's not like he's got a whole bunch of party favors, and he's brought some angels to pound on some drums, and he's, you know, throwing confetti over his head, and, you know, throwing
it's not like
mud at the demons or something like that. Instead, when he's down there, it says he proclaims his victory.
What does an open show mean to you?
It means it's a show that you can go see with without paying a cover charge or something. But, you know, it's the way that we look at the few texts that talk about it, Jesus goes down there and he proclaims his victory. So all these people who said, there's no way, no, God's not real, or there's no way that God would actually forgive you, you're an unforgivable, and they end up in hell for it. Jesus goes down, and it's just like what he did with Thomas. See?
It's triumphant.
It is. It is. But, you know, when Jesus throws the money changers and the extorters out of the temple, he doesn't do that and then says, all right, cigars for everyone. You know, he doesn't do that. For me, when I saw that Osama bin Laden was dead, for me, there was a feeling of relief in that finally the number one target in this entire war of terror from the good guys had met justice. And that's a big, even though it's just one person, that is a big statement to Al-Qaeda and Taliban and all enemies of life and truth, because that says no matter how far you hide and how much you spend to cover your tracks and protect yourself, justice will be done. And
reason to celebrate?
It is a reason to celebrate, but at the same time, it's a reason to lament. And for me, it's bittersweet because it is so tragic that our world is so twisted that a man could become so evil that so many hundreds of millions of people, if not billions of people, rejoice at his death. And it is so tragic that a man could make himself so evil. But God did not give, this is Romans 13, God did not give the government the sword to punish do-gooders and to punish evildoers and to protect do-gooders. He didn't give them the sword for no reason.
So when did you hear that Osama bin Laden had been killed? Did you hear Sunday night before you went to bed? Did you know already? Or
I did, and the first question in my mind is, how in the world did all those people get outside the White House so quick?
So you saw that celebration?
I did.
And when you saw it, what was your first thought?
It was being hit with two emotions, joy and sadness, that like I said earlier, that someone could be so evil that it would create such a rejoicing at his death. And I understand why the American government felt so compelled to execute him, because if they brought him back, you can only imagine the amount of terrorism that would go at holding who knows how many Americans hostage around the world until Osama bin Laden is released. You can only imagine the bombs that would go off until Osama bin Laden is released. I mean, it might have been something one every 10 minutes, you know, embassies around the world, or, you know, even with them burying him so quickly. They can't say that we disgraced or ignored his Muslim belief. They also can't say that we're using his body as a trophy. At first I thought, oh, now why are you burying it so quickly? Prove it, you know, to the world. But I think we'll have more than enough proof when his videos stop, you know, that he's
dead.
So
if it had happened that you were within two blocks of the White House, studying theology at a library in Washington, D.C. or something like that, and you know, you're on your own and you could have made your way down to the White House and joined the party, would you?
I wasn't in that situation, but probably not. I would probably continue to spend the evening with my wife, because I made her go through church and Bible study or Sunday school without a husband to be right there to help her take care of our kids.
Well, let's say that your wife and your kids are back here in Maryland Heights, and it just so happens that you're in Washington and you don't really have to worry about getting home to the wife and kids. But you're in position to go down and join the celebration at nobody else's expense. Would you have done that? If it was a two-block walk, would you have done that? Or would you have felt uncomfortable participating in that celebration?
Yeah, I would have felt uncomfortable.
Why?
It's death. Death is never a death is never a victory. It's always the wages of sin. And just lamenting the human condition of death, I'm happy. I'm very content. It's a feeling of peace and relief. It's an excellent stride in the right direction of the war on terror, but to throw a party that someone's dead.
So if I realize I'm really running with the speculation here, but if I were a member of your church, Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights, and I happen to be in Washington too, and I did go down, and you looked at the video and, well, there's Chuck Rathard, and he's, you know, he's sitting on somebody else's shoulders and he's whooping it up and he's got his hat on backwards and he's having a great time. Would you be disappointed in me as a member of your church? Would you be making a note to self, note to Pastor Femmel? Yeah, I better talk to that Chuck Rathard. He seems to have lost his bearings. Would you be talking to me as my pastor somewhere down the road?
No, I wouldn't, because what you're essentially doing is you are celebrating the victory of freedom and of life and of truth, winning over murder, over violence, over terrorism, over victimization. I mean, you're celebrating life. We wouldn't excommunicate you. You know, if I saw you on there, I'd say, hey, I saw you on TV, and you'd say, oh, I'm sorry, Pastor. I'd say, well, it must have been an awesome time.
No, I'd say, oh, yeah, and I heard you in Washington. You could have come down, partied with us. Where were you? That would have been great. That's probably what I would say. And then you would say, what?
Well, you know, if I were in Washington, D.C., and I weren't with my wife, I'd say, well, you know, I was following the story in the news, and I was working on some things for the next week because, you know, Bible studies are still coming. hospital calls are still coming, visits are still coming. You know, I just, but with you, I am very glad that life and truth won the day.
Well, you've pretty much hit the nail on the head here with the term bittersweet. There is a celebratory kind of quality associated with this. But there is the tragedy that goes with any death, particularly an execution, when the state, in this case, the government of the United States, has to act in such a way to do this. It's profoundly sad, which creates kind of a complicated emotion or a complicated state for the thinking Christian, the person who wants to respond to this in a God-pleasing way, and now has a kind of a conflicted, may have a, that's the way I felt. When I saw the celebrations, at first I was taken aback just because it did seem to be a little over the top. But I understood it. I mean, all you got to do is think about 9/11 and you can understand that relief, that sense of relief that you talked about. But at the same time, I was just kind of troubled by it. It just seemed like, don't do that.
Right.
But I didn't feel like I was in a position to criticize anybody who was doing it. I just didn't know what to do with it. And it sounds like you struggled with it too.
Well, I didn't struggle with it. It was just kind of like I'm so glad it happened, but, you know, we don't need to be. You know, and people really weren't celebrating. Wow, there's another guy in hell. You know, they weren't celebrating, there's one less person sucking oxygen off our planet.
They were celebrating that justice was done.
Right. And that's a good thing. It's good that we have that bearing. I'm glad that there aren't, you know, the ACLU out there saying, his family, we're hurting their feelings, and some of them are American citizens, and we need, you know, let's sue the White House for killing him. And, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I'm glad that they're at least, you know, social bearings to leave it alone.
So is this moral and theological question on your mind in your parish? Did you address this in some way in church last Sunday or 2 Sundays ago or yesterday, Bible class or in your preaching, or is it completely off the radar screen at Zion Maryland Heights?
I mean, what are we going to say? Are we going to have a funeral on Sunday for him? Are we going to...
You probably have people like some of the rest of us who are conflicted over this and not sure what the proper Christian response is to these events. They're probably a little confused about some things. They look to you, their pastor, their shepherd, to think it through for them or evaluate it theologically for them.
Most people realize that a bad man died, justice was done, and this isn't going to affect our prayer life. This isn't going to affect, you know, our paychecks. This isn't going to affect, you know, the way we put our shoes on in the morning. You know, for example, my sermon yesterday was... love is always underappreciated, but it's never ineffective. So keep loving because it does make a difference, which I was hoping would really strike home with moms, but not only moms, because all of us, our love is always underappreciated, but it's never ineffective, and it's so easy to be discouraged from it. And that message is far more important than the flash in the pan of how do I react to a dead terrorist?
Osama bin Laden was a sinner, and he probably takes his place in history with the likes of Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin, Pol Pot, people who murdered a lot of people. Sometimes we say the same sinful human nature that exists in a man like Osama bin Laden exists in all of us. Would you agree with that?
He was sin unchecked. So that same potential is in every one of us.
But most of us, while we would probably say yes and amen to the comment that you just made there because we know that's what we're supposed to say, many of us do not believe that whatever it was that drove Osama bin Laden is present in us. We say things like, look, I know that I'm not perfect.
I know that I'm a sinner. But please, don't put me in the Osama bin Laden category.
There's a movie called The Game, and I think it's Michael Douglas. But it's essentially, they put this man, for entertainment purposes of his own, to enjoy his, enjoy it. But they put him in a very difficult situation. He had to do some very hard choice things. None of us are in the situation that Osama was, in that he not only had been fed from a very young age, from birth almost, Islam, which if you read a Quran, commands you at least 48 times to physically fight and strive for the cause of Allah, or you can't be saved. You can't be fed a religion like that and then grow up peaceful, especially the way that he was taught it. But with that, he was the perfect storm in that he also had a lot of money. He was in a very powder keg area of the world, and he had a lot of like-minded people around him that fed that anger. So all of us have the same potential in us of
all of us have
character
the,
flaws.
All of
but
us
we
have
don't
the
have,
same potential to turn out like Osama bin Laden.
But we don't have the same means to fuel that fire. So instead of somebody killing thousands of people on one day, instead they will victimize their children every night by not paying attention to them and causing them to have a bad association with you, their dad or their mom, and therefore almost everybody that same gender that you are. And then that, of course, strains the relationship with the other parent, simply because you want to sit on Facebook or play a video game or watch TV. Are you killing thousands of people? No. But you are twisting somebody for the rest of their life. And who knows how that'll manifest itself. See, this is why it's so important for people to be in good shows, good radio shows, and good Bible studies in good church. Because on a weekly or a daily basis, you are reevaluating the way sin has crept into your life. So that, like Paul, you will flee sin and embrace what is good.
Let's squeeze a phone call in here and talk to David. Hi, David. You're on the Bible study.
Hi, Chuck. Hey, a fundamental question with me is, since this man, bin Laden, was raised in a religion through no fault of his own, from a child up in a country in the Middle East somewhere, and was indoctrinated with this garbage and this religion, does that automatically consign him to hell because through no fault of his own he was raised in a situation where maybe he didn't know about Jesus? That's a fundamental question.
Okay.
Can you answer that?
We've got about a minute left here. We'll see what Pastor Femmel can do with that. Pastor?
This is the very question that drove Paul to the ends of the earth as much as he could, because the people that he was talking to, through no fault of their own, did not know Jesus. And so passionately he pursued and tried to talk to them about Jesus and show them how wonderful he is. Because there is only one way, one truth, one life, and that's Jesus. If you do not trust him as your Lord and Savior on the judgment day, it's bad news. God does not owe anybody to be saved. He does not owe it to anybody. That he allows some to be saved, that he reaches out to us, that's grace. At the same time, Osama bin Laden embraced what his conscience should have told him not to do. But we can wrestle with this and say, well, then why doesn't God send an email to everybody? Or we could be that email. We could pray for missionaries. We could support missionaries. We could go on mission trips. We can get involved in our church and do things for our area. We could change the world for the people around us. And when we change the world for them and they start changing the world around them, then this question will be a question we don't ask anymore, because we are reaching out to people and showing them Jesus, just like Paul did.
Pastor Mark Femmel, 1:30 this afternoon. What's the event at Zion?
If you have if you got some hands and some feet, show up at 1:30 at Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. We'll put some boxes on some trucks and show that love to people in Alabama, and hopefully answer your question that you just asked.
Somewhere along the way.
That's right.
Thank you, Pastor. Pastor John Lukomsky helps us with the middle of John 5 next time.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.